Friday, August 28th. Obviously, you can hear the rain. It's kind of pleasant to be on this beautiful porch, Bill, and enjoy the rain while you can sit outside. For the benefit of our listeners, I will inform you that from time to time you hear some automobiles, vehicles out on Innis Street. We are, speaking of Innis Street, in the old Innis House, the historic Innis House, and this is something that Bill bought with his wife some years ago, about a decade ago, and they've done some beautiful work on it, folks. You're going to have to see it. That's all I can tell you. But that being the case, let's talk a bit about Bill. How are you doing this morning, Bill?
Wonderful, Neil. Wonderful.
And Bill, Bill and I come from the same part of the world, the Mon Valley, in that respect. We really, literally, we're only a couple of miles apart to speak of when we were growing up. I'm a little older than Bill by about a year, something like that. He went to Thomas Jefferson when it was a relatively new school. Right?
Brand new school, yeah.
And I went to McKeesport, and we never played each other in those days, anyhow.
Nope. Not now either, because TJ's too big.
That happened. You played ball down there, and were an athlete, and that stayed with you all your life, and we're going to talk somewhat about that as we go through the day. But let's talk a little bit about those early days in Pleasant Hills, if
Pleasant
you will.
Pleasant Hills, yeah.
And how you just lived your life.
Great place to grow up. Sound community, safe. If you walked around at night past dark, the cops would give you a ride home. Kindly. If you didn't behave, the neighbors told your parents about it. If you were hungry, you got fed in every house on the block. Nice people, simpler times in the 50s and early 60s, and good memories, fond memories. Yeah.
Good place to live.
Yes, it was. Wonderful place to live. Yeah. As is Oil City.
Is Oil City.
That's why we're here. That's
right.
There
you go. Yeah. You, of course, graduate from Thomas Jefferson, and did you go straight to Clarion after that?
No, I went to a small college called Davidson Elkins College for a year, and didn't do well. Played around too much, had too much fun, immature, but had a great time. Came back, went to the steel mills, Irwin Works, worked there. Went to Clarion then. Guidance counselor named Ruth Manning called Clarion and got me in. Had a good time there, too good a time, as a matter of fact. And wonderfully, however, I met my wife, Sonia, there on a blind date. And she didn't like me. And went back upstairs and given a haul, and I had to coax her back down. We had an accident in my Studebaker. Later on in the evening, got sideswiped and almost had a head-on collision. In Clarion, pulled over, and she was amazed at how calm I was. I said, gee, I'm always calm, you know. As you know, it's not the case, Neil. But as it turned out, I took her home and said, you know what, it was not a very good evening. Let's try brunch tomorrow at Johnny Garneau's in Clarion. And we did, and that's 43 years ago. We've been married happily. Then, because it was a Vietnam era, and I knew I had to go there eventually, I joined the Marines, thinking, let's go, be done with it, and was only in the Marines about 6 days at Paris. My mother took ill with a stroke, died, and about 10 days later, Sonia and I were married while I was on leave, and had to ask permission of the Marines to get married, and they granted it, thankfully. We eloped to Maryland, went to Vietnam, came home, and had a great Clarion experience because I was in Camp Lejeune shortly to get out of the Marines and called Dr. Dana Still, who was, I think, Vice President then, or Dean, and he called the Marines and got me out early, got me some classes situated to begin in January of 1968, and the rest is history. I had a great education at Clarion, a very positive experience that led to a great career as a teacher and school administrator and coach, and I love Clarion University. It brought me Sonia.
Yeah. Bill, I don't know, did you start out specializing in special education when you were at Clarion? Or
I started out specializing in Iron City Beer when I was at Clarion, quite frankly, you know, for the first few years.
That's good.
And
good
then, because Sonia was in special education, I took a look at it and liked it, and was tutored and mentored by a gentleman named Dr. Joseph Stewart, Dr. Frank Batista, and a special friend, Dr. Dan Shirey. who I remain friends with today. His wife and he are good friends of ours, and he, tough teacher, tough professor, demanding, but I learned a lot from him. And actually, he came to Kotzebue, Alaska, where I was a school administrator there, and he came for a vacation with his wife, and I couldn't find a school psychologist. Dr. Shari had that bill, and he stayed and worked with me. A great pleasure for me to have him as a colleague and a mentor at the same time. So my Clarion connections are strong.
Oh, yeah, powerful.
Strong, yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the 50s, I had friends, of course, who were going to various schools, they're going into education. I don't remember people in those days, in the 50s, talking about, I'm going to specialize in special ed.
No.
Wasn't that a 60s?
It didn't exist. And actually, Sonia was probably the first graduating class with a degree in special education. Hers was actually a minor or a co-degree, elementary and special education. So no, it began in the 60s, and of course we were lucky enough to be in Alaska during the time when the public law for the education of the handicapped became a part of reality, and children who had needs that were special were given the opportunity to have a free, public, and appropriate education. And Clarion was a leader in that, no question. Because of my exposure and education at Clarion with Dr. Shari, Dr. Schreffler, Dr. Vardy, Dr. Stewart, I was way ahead of the time, and so I was given opportunities I wouldn't have had otherwise, because Alaska was a new kind of frontier, educationally as well, but nobody had the background that Sonia and I had that was there at the time. We were very, very fortunate. Yeah. And
kind of remarkable to think about at the fit. You guys did, of course, go to Alaska, as you indicated.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a tough decision to make?
How
did that happen?
It wasn't mine to make, Neil.
Oh, okay.
One day I came home. I was about to graduate at age 28, finally. And had a job offer in Brookfield to teach special education, and hoped I could coach there maybe, and I was happy as a lark. And Sonia said, can you help me with the sale on Saturday? I said, what sale? The house sale. Well, what's going on with that? Well, you have two choices. You can go to Alaska or Australia. And I said, I was thinking Brookfield. And she said, well, let's go for a year. So I did some research, and I realized that There are 10 snakes in the world that can kill you immediately. 9 are in Australia. And so I thought, nah, we'll go to Alaska. So we went for a year and stayed 23. And there was a great retirement program for educators. It was a 20-year and out program. And Sonia went 20 and was out, and I went 21. And had a great, great, great career. Fantastic opportunity, and it's all on her. I loved it, but it was her idea. She's the risk taker. It was her, and I appreciate that.
I'm glad you're kind of working that into this conversation, because I'm of the opinion, and I tell young people that we encounter, opportunity is not necessarily right next door. You have to go from time to time.
Yeah. Be a risk taker. That's right.
We all go.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And it works out. Mm-hmm. At least a good part of the time, it works out. Mm-hmm. But if you don't go, you'll never know.
Exactly. Yeah, we loved it. It was a great experience for us, not only as a teacher, but personally, it was great to have the chance to fish and to photograph, take pictures of wildlife. Part of my job, and Sonia's also for a time, was to fly from village to village in a charter airplane, Cessna 206 off to 185. And we have untold opportunities to see thousands of caribou migrating, hundreds of thousands of moose and bears and wolves. Just a great opportunity to eat salmon every day. I mean,
right.
to and the halibut as you wanted to.
It's rough.
No, tough. Yeah, tough. Lovely place to live, and our son had a great opportunity to grow there. And kids were free to roam. I mean, you were safe. There was no, there were bears around, but you didn't, there weren't any child molesters, as it were. There weren't any gangs or those kinds of trappings. It was, great place for kids.
Now, you've told me previously that, of course, you had a lot of dealings with the Eskimo, the
yes,
native
Eskimos. Yes, we did. Yes,
a lot
we
of
did.
Dealings.
Yeah.
And you were living in remote places when you did this because their villages are kind of remote. Am I correct?
Right, right. No roads. But we had the opportunity, the great privilege, to live among the Yupik Eskimo people in southwestern Alaska, Dillingham area, and the Inupiaq Eskimo, the northern Eskimos in Kotzebue. Great people, and we were, you know, our son has red hair. And so, you know, he was the only red-headed child in Kotzebue, Alaska, among 3,000 inhabitants. And, you know, it gives him a chance to be the minority. Wow! You know, you learn to get along with all kinds of people, because all of a sudden, being the Caucasian, you aren't in charge anymore. He's one of the kids. And we had a great time there. As a matter of fact, he came back to his mother came from the local area of Tynesta, and her parents were farmers there, dairy farmers. And Rich came back when he was 12 with a good friend of his named Robert Nelson, also 12, an Eskimo young man. They came back, spent the summer together on the farm, and remain friends today. And Robert's older brother, Craig, is in Kotzebue, and he's a teacher. A student taught in the high school I was teaching in Anchorage. And well, we have strong connections with those people, a high regard for them. They are a people who survived climates and changes we couldn't do. They have numerous wonderful qualities, one of which is they have, in teaching them, we teach kids, you know, by phonics and so on, but the Eskimo children often had ear problems because of the cold, otitis media, so they couldn't be taught using phonics. But they have, because of their history of survival, they have an excellent, greatly developed visual memory, finding their way around through wherever they were going, snow and ice, whatever else. And so they learned visually. It was a great experience to learn how to see how other people learn, appreciate their culture. Just a happy time for us, happy memories. And we still correspond with those people in Kotzebue and Dillingham. And as a matter of fact, some have been here on this very porch and visited. And brought salmon, by the way. And
yeah,
always,
well, that's a
always appreciate that. That's right. That's
salmon.
Right, yeah.
If you're from Alaska.
That's right. That's right.
All right, so your career is fulfilled in Alaska. You have your time in. You two decide it's time to go. You've retired. You can go literally anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was an immediate direct journey to Oil City or the Benango County or for that matter, Forest County. I think you had some choices and you did this. That
yeah, we looked at a number of places, Kentucky, Tennessee, someplace warmer, the Carolinas, New England. But Pennsylvania was where our son was. He came back to Penn State in 86, graduated in 90, married in 92 or 3, had a child, first child in 95, and has two sons now. So we wanted to be someplace near him because he's our only child and a favorite of ours, as a matter of fact. And, so we looked in the eastern part of the state where he comes from, and I was offered a job there, as a matter of fact, coaching football, and almost took it, but thought we were kind of too close. Let's not be smothering of our son. So we came back to this area because it was pretty. And looked around, had an RV we were living in, and looked here and there, and kind of liked Oil City, and liked the old houses, and so we got a realtor, and we were looking. This is 1997, summer. They were tearing up downtown Oil City because of the redoing of the streets, and it was a mess, but only for a short time. We were coming down the north side, down past the Salvation Army with our realtor the third day in a row in August. Hot, humid, and traffic is backed up. Mm-hmm. And backed up. But we kept making progress. We finally got to the bottom where what was that little store called? The Byers, not Byers Fair, but the Country Fair. And the two roads converge, and traffic was coming down both hills, and we realized at the bottom, I realized, there's no cop. No one's directing traffic. People were taking turns. Now, in Alaska, if you did that, they'd be shooting on every corner because people carry rifles in their car. their truck, and they're short-tempered, and they're younger, and they're just violent. These people were taking turns. There were no hand gestures. There were no, you know, I'm thinking, this place is civilized. I think I'm going to live here. And that was a great part of our thinking. You know, let's be more aggressive in trying to find a home here, because this nice place, it had a river, it had civilized people, good history, lovely houses, and we had friends in the area. And Sonia came from upriver, about 17 miles, and it has four seasons, and tomatoes and corn in the summertime, and pretty mild winters. And so we came here for that reason, and stayed for that reason, and have been very happy. Wise decision on our part. Nice people.
Well, we as a community have benefited from that decision, and I for one, am really pleased you came here. What led to the house, specifically to this?
Let me back up a second. One more thing I want to tell you about.
Yeah,
something that happened before we came here. In 1990, our son was a college senior, and I came back from Alaska, took a week off to come see him in the senior year and to enjoy the fall. Brought a friend of mine named Mike Jones back along, fellow teacher, and we enjoyed the area. We drank apple cider and went to a football game at Penn State and saw them beat Boston College in a rainstorm. Great experience. But during that week, I came to Oil City with my friend Larry Puglio and visited him just a short time. It was Wednesday evening. He said, "Billy, let's go to a football game." I said, "What football game? It's Wednesday night." He said, "You'll see." Went to the high school, Oil City High School, on a Wednesday evening in September, I think it was, 1990, and there were four football teams, the gold, the blue, the green, and the red. And they had great equipment, and they stood up and sang a national anthem before the game, which doesn't always happen anymore. Stands were full of parents. They had the people were buying hot dogs. The parents were selling them in the stand. They had cheerleaders, and they had referees. I'm thinking, what? There were about probably 100 young men playing football and probably 100 young ladies being cheerleaders. And a positive experience. And I thought, gee, someday I want to come back here and coach. And I did.
You did.
All right.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. You did. And we're going to talk about you doing it. What were the colors on those teams?
It was red, the gold, the green, and the, who did I forget?
Red, gold, green. Red, gold, green.
No, that's gold. Blue. I coached the Blues, matter of fact.
Exactly.
For a
we'll
while.
Get
yeah.
to that. So
yeah,
okay. Folks should remember there was, even then, in 1990, you say.
There was a draw. This
Larry.
Yes.
And Larry, by the way, is very well known in this community.
Yes, he is.
Himself,
yes,
so
he is.
He's a draw in himself.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
All right. Okay. Now, Bill, you did make the decision that you wanted to live in a place like Oil City.
Right.
Oil City itself, because of the civilized.
Yes. Yes.
It
yes.
Is.
It is.
It really
it
is.
Is. Yes.
Folks who live here don't necessarily appreciate that. You got to go somewhere else to actually
exactly.
realize that.
Exactly.
It's a
yeah.
good place to live. Real
yeah.
good. But the house itself. What? I know you went through a couple machinations, if you will, about this house.
Well, the house was an accident. We bought a house in. No. We had an offer on a house in Oliver Manor, a nice contemporary four-bedroom, two-and-a-half bath, nice house. Had a deal on it. We were waiting for the appraisal to be completed, and our realtor was a friend, and I said, let's go see that big, old, ugly house. And it was ugly. It hadn't been painted in a long time. And the shrubbery was grown up and whatever else. And let's go look at that, just for the heck of it. And so we did. And when we came in, I was like, I mean, it was beautiful. They wanted $159,900, I think it was. I'm thinking, you can't buy a condo in Anchorage, Alaska for that kind of money. So we said, well, we should have bought this house. Well, just about that time, the appraisal came back on the house that we were going to buy, and it was a little bit lower than the asking price, so we backed out. And we bought this house. And everybody said, you're crazy, because I'm not handy. You know, my best tool is my checkbook. Let's face it. You know what I mean? I'm not. I'm a grunt laborer, but I'm not certainly a carpenter. Or, you know, I can paint. You know what I mean? Yeah. But anyhow, we were fortunate enough to get here and find great people to help us. Dave Schreckengrost was our home inspector. he told me when he saw the house, he said, Bill, the furnaces are older than you are. You need new ones. The roof leaks. You need a new one. And I needed to find a plumber. And he said, Joe Sambita, he's a good plumber and an honest man. And he was, and he still is. Joe has a key to our house, okay? We find some good contractors in the area that were very good and were very fair. And we find people to give us hints. Some people gave us good deals on beds that were in their family for years. That whole house needs a bed like this, you know what I mean? Or the chair you're in right now. We got this chair, this glass table for $75 at a garage sale. Somebody says, hey, this is good for your house. You know, nice people. And after you find those kind of experiences, I mean, you know, what are you going to say? This is my kind of town. Somebody then say, hey, come to church with us. We found the church, and the pastor came by and sat on this porch with us and made us feel at home, and we're still there.
Let's pause just for a second on that theme.
Okay.
You found a church.
Mm-hmm.
This is a churchy community.
Yes, it is.
It's
yes,
amazing.
It is.
Really.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's relatively small. The population's now 10,005 in the city and maybe 3,000 or 4,000 outside of it, and yet we have churches that could support a community of 50,000 or 60,000
yeah.
people.
We
have
yeah,
that many,
mm-hmm.
and very active churches,
mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing,
yes,
in my
is.
View. And I
yes,
think you
is.
Share
yeah,
that.
I do.
And you've been a leader from time to time, anyhow, in your church. I know that. And a lot of people step up to the plate. They don't just.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And all churches in town are good
yeah,
about
they're
that.
All that.
Yeah, they're very. It's a caring town. Yeah.
Now, the other thing is, I remember, I didn't meet you when you came to town, but I remember my wife and I driving by. We all liked this house. It's just, like you say, it needed paint, needed mm-hmm. a roof. Mm-hmm. And we said, who was the crazy
yes,
person
yeah.
who took that on? It ends up, I get to know you pretty well, and we got to know who the crazy person was. But, Bill, we were all obviously very pleased that you did.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're fortunate to be
thank
here.
You,
and,
thank you.
Yeah,
the porch we're sitting on. I know you did a major renovation on it, and again, thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure.
That's about all you're ever going to get out of it. You'll never get your money back, Bill. All you get is a few thank yous.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of fun. A lot of fun, yeah.
Okay, now, you get established here in Oil City. You do a lot of things. You've had a lot of different career paths in the city just in the last 10 years or so. You did get early on connected with that childhood program, early childhood, I forget exactly the name, but you were, what was that?
I'm drawing a blank now, too. I'm drawing a blank now, too. It was called, it was only there 7 years ago. What was it called?
Wait a minute. Come on, Kate, just welcome every child.
No, it was actually, it was, not welcome every child, that was a part of it. It was...
Intervention.
Early Head Start.
There you go.
Only
there
spent
go.
7 years there. I just can't think of its
yeah,
name.
Yeah,
Early Head Start,
and,
yeah.
And I have to tell the audience that we would watch Bill. Bill's an outstanding manager. He's a natural when it comes to leading groups of people. He believes in training. I know that's one big thing on training and education. You could tell because they're almost all young women who work
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
They all had the same approach. It was very professional. The other thing, we comment on is, boy, Bill Hawkins sure can pick some good-looking young girls. Yeah, it was tough for him to go to work.
It is fortunate that you find people that have good brains and also are attractive. But,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
really nice young women. Right?
That was a really good opportunity for me because I was older, had been a school administrator before, had put together programs in the bush of Alaska where you had a telephone and that was about all you had for resources. And so here I had... telephone and a car and a grant and all kinds of things to help me out. We hired good people. I wasn't alone in that. But it was an important thing, and still is today, that people that have children who are young themselves need to have some guidance and some support to get medical attention for their children and, you know, to learn how kids develop. And those people do a good job of that. We were fortunate in that my only asset was that I believe in being positive to my staff and to reinforce them. And I think if you catch a child being good and tell them about it, they'll do it again. And adults are the same way. And if you find them doing the right thing and say, gee, thanks for doing that. I appreciate that. You did a good job. If you expect things from them, they'll do it. Kids are the same way. If you expect it, you often get it, you know.
Well, you had an excellent team down there.
Yes, we did. Yes.
Really did.
They're still there. They're still good.
They're still there.
Yes, they're still good.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was really a federal program.
It is. Yes.
And I know, I'll tell the audience that those in D.C. who would come and do the semi-annual or biannual, I guess, audits and things like that and inspections of your program, they thought well of it.
They did.
Let's just get that on record.
They did.
They thought very
Thank
well
you.
Of it.
They did.
They were pleased to come to little old Oil City, which they considered rural, rural America, and not like the inner city programs, and find out that we had a program that actually they emulated in many, many ways.
This was a program that goes into the home. It's a home visit program. And before I left there, these young women had done 16,000 plus home visits. I had occasion to have four of them at this very table about a week ago visiting in the evening, and now they're over 35,000 home visits. That's a lot of contact in a lot of homes, and a lot of good things happen because of them. And you need to understand that, I was a good part of that, but I didn't make home visits. I just stood behind them and patted them on the back. Mm-hmm. They're tough, and they're dedicated, they're bright. A lot of them, most of them, Clarion graduates. You should know that. Yeah,
I didn't know that. Good to hear.
Yes,
good.
It was good. Clarion University, which has been a great place for us to find recruits, because we often had them come as interns before they graduated and got a chance to meet them and say, yep, this is a keeper.
And this was a good opportunity for them to get into their
exactly.
career, their professional
exactly.
career path.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of them will have done well and will do well.
And are doing well, that's correct. Right. You betcha.
You weren't just that, though. You're a very active fellow. You also were involved. You got back to one of your first loves, true loves, other than your wife and your kid, your son, I should say, and that was football.
Yes.
And you came back to the program you were talking about, you alluded mm-hmm. to when you and Larry went to see the game in mm-hmm. 1990. You went to see those young guys play again, but this time you couldn't resist the call of being on the field and being a coach. Tell us about that.
Well, the gentleman in charge of that league, my hero, Pat Patterson, has conducted that league. He's been the director for 35 years. And it's the best league I've ever seen for young kids. Best equipment. The coaches are all certified, and Pat has his thumb on everything, because you don't have people cursing at kids. You don't have people treating kids badly. Kids don't miss practice. Kids don't miss school. You go to school. You behave yourself. You play football. You play it well. You're disciplined. It's a very controlled game. The defense is always a 44, so the kids can learn. The offense can be wild and open, but the defense is something you can count on. You can learn to adjust to it. I contacted Pat when I was still living up in Tyneside in our RV looking for a home. Mm-hmm. Pat, I saw your league. I'd like to coach in it. I've been a coach in Anchorage for a number of years at high school level. And he said, I can't make you head coach. I don't know you. I said, I don't care. I'd be glad to hold the sticks, paint the lines. I want to be a part of this. And I did become one of the coaches with the blue team, coached the line with my friend, good friend now, Butch Truitt. His son Aaron was on that team and a good-sized lineman. And Butch and I coached them together and had a good success at that, a lot of fun. I coached again the next year, I think, with the blue as a line coach. And then they had a number of more kids came out. So he added a team called the Blackhawks, and I was the head coach of that for 3 years, along with Jim Flaherty, one of the coaches. We had a good time, and you were at many of the games you saw. We did have to win a championship our second year. And very fortunate. Had very good players, and, my approach to the game is much like Pat's is. I'm an old Marine like Pat is, and I believe in discipline, and you keep your helmet on, and you don't gawk around, and you come to practice, and again, we expect you to do well, and we pat you on the back for doing that. And if you screw up, we don't boot you around for it. We say, let's try it again. Let's do it right. It was a very positive experience for me. I'm now not coaching anymore. Butch Truitt and I are up in the booth. We're called Pat's Enforcers. We make sure everybody follows the rules, and they do. The coaches are great people. Actually, we have a good seat for free, and they give us hot dogs. So we can't beat that, you know. But that league, I think, is emblematic of what goes on in this town and has for years. They like their kids. And their kids have not, the young men that were in that program years ago are now the coaches. Grandkids of some of those guys are now playing. It's been going a long time. Baseball's also good. They have programs for the girls as well. So yeah, nice place to have your children raised. And yeah, there's some problems. And everything isn't perfect in Oil City, but you know it's home.
A lot of pluses.
Yes, it is.
Good place to live. I had the pleasure of attending the game. Actually, several games that led up to the championship. And the championship the year the Blackhawks won. The year before they didn't do too well. They were definitely, at the beginning of the season, I believe you guys were underdogs, but the team came along beautifully. Well coached, you won't say that, but I will say it. Very well coached.
Thank you.
And the ball players really matured that year.
Yeah, they did.
Recall.
Nice young man.
What a great championship game. I'm sure you remember that. Now,
yes,
folks,
I do.
You won't know this. You had to be there. But there had to be 1,500 people in the stands that night. It was, of course, it's a night game. The enthusiasm was terrific. It's just a wonderful small town experience, and
yes, it was.
It turns out
yep.
you guys won.
Yep.
So it's just very positive.
It was.
Very plus.
Yep.
And you're right, Bill. Guys around here take responsibility for these young fellas.
Mm-hmm.
They do have choices, and you guys provide them with some very positive choices. A lot of folks nowadays, we know, come from single parent families,
mm-hmm.
and they really need something besides just mom at home to shape their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Those ages where they're making choices about what kind of person they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you for you and your colleagues.
It's Pat Patterson.
Pat Patterson, yeah. Yes. We have to. We all debt of gratitude.
Some of the coaches have been there 20 years now doing that. So that, those guys have set the stage. I just took part a short little time, but
Again, people don't realize that when Pat Patterson walks into a group, most of the men, whatever age, they call him Coach Pat, first off.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows him. He knows so many people, he doesn't know any of them anymore. You know,
mm-hmm.
he's kind of, hi, how you doing?
Yep.
But he's bigger than life. He really is.
Yes, he is. Good man.
Quite the guy. All right, now, consistent with your interest in what I call people, humanity. That's what I'm going to say. Consistent with your very strong involvement with your fellow man in the various areas we've talked about, education, church, you've been involved,
mm-hmm.
and the young people, and of course the very young with that early head start. You also have a heart that's big enough for the animals of the world. You're known for your pets. Poor Max, he just died, right?
Mac passed away.
Yeah, he just died. Two little
Boston Terriers.
Two little Boston Terriers. They hop up like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Classic Boston Terriers. You spend most of their life on your lap, and you don't mind. It seems we all know that. We've
That's
seen
right.
that happen time and again. But you've expanded that. You became involved in the Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of elaborate.
Well, I don't know how that happened. Somehow or other, I met Joan Leffler, who was the president of the Humane Society, and we chatted, and I don't know how it happened, and she said, we have an opening on the board, are you interested? And I thought, gee, I got so many things going on, but, you know, I've been blessed and with health and happiness and a good wife and you know, good people around me, and so, yeah, why not? Joined that, a couple years after that, somebody on the board who was the treasurer had to leave. Now I'm the treasurer, had been for about 5 years. No big deal, I can bounce a checkbook and anybody can do it. I want to take the light off me for a second and talk about the Humane Society, because they've been around for about 50 years. They've had a shelter down here since the DePaula Road shelter, about 45 of those years. We're building a new shelter now. We're about to try to. Ours is about old and worn out. But there are two ladies I want to mention for posterity, because they're not here, but they're my heroes. Holly Bylow, Linda Noble, they're the backbone of what we call our spay and neuter program. If you get a dog at the Venango County Humane Society to adopt, it costs you $32. A cat costs $22, tax included. What you also get is a certificate for spay or neutering of that animal, free. Okay, now there's some caveats to that, because some veterinarians will charge more than our certificate pays, but most take it at face value. for 26 years, every Tuesday and Saturday evening, everyone except for fell on a holiday like Christmas, Holly and Linda have held a bingo in Venango County to support the spay and neuter program. Their money is a separate account from anybody else's, and they put that money just to spay and neuter. So if you go around the county, you don't see puppies for sale free, because most of the, all of our animals must be spayed or neutered if they leave the shelter within like 6 weeks. Okay, they've done that selflessly for 26 years. So you know what little I do is a drop in a bucket. They're my heroines or heroes, and I want posterity to know that. And so yes, it is important that work is done with the Humane Society, and they're a worthwhile endeavor. Yeah, it's kind of a my heart's there.
Yes, your heart's there. It's for you. It's been a labor of love, if you will. Not hard, but
I'm a small contributor.
Well,
yeah,
admittedly,
small contributor.
But there's you're involved, Bill. And you're let's just say you're typical of the kind of people who do that. Not everybody would be inclined to do it, but your concern for the small animals and the welfare of them is consistent with what you've done in your life. You've always been you've had a special concern for those who need a little extra help and a little extra attention.
Well, that may be because I got good things as a child. I was, you know, well taken care of and adopted, by the way. I wasn't born to my parents and was fortunate enough to have them adopt me as a baby. And so I got the best things of life. Wouldn't always have come my way, but they did. And so I'm appreciative of that and thank not only my parents, but God for it and the community around me, you know what I mean? And lucky to find Oil City. And it all boils down to real, back to Clarion, little stitch in time. When my mother passed away and I was dating Sonia, that was my family was gone. I was in the Marines. I was 6 days into my Marine Corps. I was homeless. And if I hadn't married Sonia, where would I have been? You know, so, and God gave me Sonia, I'm sure, you know, and I appreciate it. Yeah, lucky. One of those
good
things.
You,
yeah. And Clarion gave me Sonia, so I always, yeah.
All right, now, we're obviously taping for future viewing by those who will come after us, Bill. Based on your experiences in life, this is a tough question in a way, but you're a guy who's had a lot of experiences and you've seen it whole variety of ways. We haven't really mentioned much about Vietnam, and we won't, but you've seen a lot of different sides of life. What would you say to the younger people who will be watching this in 10, 20 years from now? Obviously, there's hope.
Oh, absolutely, there's hope. Yeah. Good gracious. Yeah, you know what? I think back sometimes of my parents' conversations in the 50s, and I would overhear them say things. My dad would be, you know, out of work for a while because of the recession or whatever. And my mother one time said to me when we were going to a ball game, she was driving me, I was playing Little League ball, and she said something. My dad had been off work for a while. She said, you know, I think some of our happiest times are when we have the least. And I thought, it always kind of stuck in my mind. And so living in Alaska, in rural Alaska, the bush, we didn't have TV most of the time. I had sometimes satellite TV, but didn't work most of the time. So we spent a lot of time playing games or just doing family things. And I think that young people, first of all, should find a church. Because if you have a church, you're never going to be without a job. Because they'll always find you a job or find you some training. You're not going to go hungry. You feed your spirit as well. But if you take the time to enjoy the small things, homemade soup, or you know what I mean, or
yes.
you know,
particularly I have to. Particularly your home cooking. Yeah. You're a great cook.
Some days.
That's one of the reasons you want to know, Bill. Great cook.
Some days.
Wife
could
bake very well. You're not a very good.
I can't bake at all. No, I can't
cook.
Bake at all.
Yeah.
But I think you know that's why I've remained positive, because I think if you act positive to other people, they'll act the same way back to you. And I've had a saying I got off a guy in Dillingham, Alaska, God rest his soul, named Dick Armstrong. And he was a bush pilot, my neighbor. And he'd fly his airplane. He'd say, every day's a holiday for me, you know. And I stole that expression from him, and I've passed it along to a number of other people in my life, and I hear it back by email from ex-students or ex-colleagues, because I think if you're pretty positive about what's going to happen during that day, it usually is.
It works.
And when something bad goes wrong, okay, build a bridge and get over it, and be thankful for what you have, you know, because I don't mean to dwell upon it, but I do think God has a plan, and if you put your faith in God, you'll be all right. You know, you have a bad day, but not a bad lifetime. You know, so.
Well, I personally, as well as for the community, want to thank you for coming here, and bringing you and your wife.
My good fortune. Here. My good fortune. Yeah.
His wife happens to be the current mayor. I'll just put that in parenthetically. But also, for the service that you have performed and you've taken on for the community and for the leadership that you've provided, not just in getting involved, but in your views of the life around here and how to live the life around here. It's been an immense positive impact on this area, and we are all indebted to you for doing that, and I really mean that, Bill, sincerely. And I really thank you for coming here, and I think the whole community thinks the same.
You're very kind, but I got more than I gave, trust me.
Okay.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
My pleasure.